Hello, welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with just me, Green Diva Meg, this week. Green Diva Lynn Hasselberger worked her little fanny off in Chicago hosting me last week, and we had a bunch of fun events for Earth Day. And we got to meet Bill Curtis and John St. Augustine at Curtis Studios. Bill Curtis. Anyway, he does Earth Matters with Bill Curtis, which you'll hear later in the show, and you hear one of those every week. So this week's show, this is what you're, have in store for you. So listen up, buttercups. Dr. Green, the wonderful pediatrician, who's really advocates for natural, medicine when it's appropriate. And he's doing a wonderful campaign called Whiteout, which is all about helping parents understand that processed foods in their babies, you know, first part of their diet, often the first foods they eat, are very processed foods. And he's got some interesting things to say that I totally agree with, and I think it'll be very helpful. Holly Thompson does a great Green Divas Foodiefile segment about grains. Hey, it's almost like a theme, right? And while we're talking about food, we did a really fun product review with these two young brothers. One of them's in high school, who've developed a natural candy line that's like vegan, gluten-free, non-GMO, fair trade awesomeness called Unreal. Listen to that and get inspired and maybe get hungry. I don't know. Then we do a wildlife segment, GD's Heart Wildlife, with Dr. Charles Rawlings, who is like a Renaissance man. Among the many things he does, he's a wildlife underwater photographer, and he's written a book called Living Shells. And we talk about his experience over these many years that he's been taking photographs underwater and the changes he has seen that are due to climate change. And then we're introducing a new segment called Inspired Green Divas. And our first feature is with Christy Funk, who talks to us about radical self-care. And, you know, radical self-care, come on, what's not to love? It's a great show. I hope you'll listen up and enjoy. And otherwise, have a great green day. Green Diva's Heart Wildlife. Who can resist all those videos and images of adorable baby animals? But sometimes these adorable creatures really need our help. Let's celebrate wild animals, learn about them, and do what we can to help them. Well, this is actually, I love this guy. I just talked to him for the first time a couple of minutes ago, and I already love him. Dr. Charles Rawlings, he's a classic overachiever. He's a neurosurgeon, a lawyer, magnificent underwater photography, which is a bit of what we're going to talk about specifically. He's an author and a father, and he has a teenage girl who I'm sure is fabulous, but, you know, among his other kids, he's got twin boys. Anybody with a teenage girl gets extra credit. Hi, Dr. Rawlings.
Hi, Meg. Thanks very much for that introduction.
Kind of bizarre, but you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about, believe me.
And it's all good. So, and for anybody who wants to, I think your website, livingshells.com.
That's correct. That's one of them, yeah.
Yeah, one of them. But if you go there, you can see some of the fantastic underwater photographs that he's taken of shells, and talk to us a little bit about how you got into it, and then what living shells means.
Sure. I suppose that my interest in shells, living or just the seashells themselves, began when I was a kid. I always used to walk the beach and pick up empty seashells, as most people do these days. They know what a seashell is.
Right.
And I always wondered about them, and because they're these little beautiful miniature creations. And actually, when I was a little older, still a kid, I found that there were things living in these shells, and not hermit crabs, but
yeah,
like real things.
Yeah.
So that was always in the back of my mind. I became certified to dive back in 1981. And after I dove for about a year, I was completely taken by the underwater world and the patterns, the shapes, the colors, all that. So I started into photography. Mm. And I first started doing what almost everyone starts doing, is macro photography and then reefscapes, and tried to photograph fish and things like that.
Right.
And one night, I typically do a lot of night diving, I started seeing these shells.
At night? What, do you have special lights when you go night diving?
You do. You've got, obviously, they're waterproof, and they're, back then, they didn't have halogen lights. They were just big 6D
right.
battery-operated headlight things.
Wow.
That didn't have as much light as the halogens these days, but
yep.
you could still see pretty decent stuff. And I would find these shells crawling across the sand or the reef or wherever you may be diving.
Wow.
So I started taking photographs of these shells. And over the course of a couple years, I started looking into other books, photography books, scientific books, and there were no good photographs, no good art photographs, I should say,
yeah.
of living shells. And so I made it a goal of mine to photograph living shells for more than one reason. First, from an artistic standpoint, they are amazingly exquisite. I mean, people
yeah.
just don't realize when they take up a shell in their hand what the animal looks like, what an artistic creation this shell is.
Well, or even, you know, when you find like a nicely shaped shell and it's all dry and, you know, whatever, you don't realize all of the stuff that is around it when it's alive with the animal, right?
No, absolutely not. And just to take a good example, everyone knows what a conch is, or I shouldn't say everyone, but most people know what conchs are. They eat conch
right.
critters. They've probably been to Florida and seen
yep.
the queen conch and all that. When you look at the animal, what typically comes out are the eyes.
Yeah.
And if you do a little research and you do macro photography of the eyes themselves are built much like the human eye.
Hmm.
And using experimental techniques where they take the strombus eye and take photographs through it, it turns out that these conchs actually have as good a vision as humans do.
Wow.
They're a little different in terms of, you know, maybe some abstract or some convexity, but it's pretty much the same. So when you're looking at them, they're looking at you. And the reason they have such good eyesight is because they have a fair number of predators.
Yeah.
And so they want to be able to see these things coming.
So you've been doing this for quite a number of years. Have you seen a difference in, I don't want to say the quantity, but in you know, due to environmental change or any other kind of changes that have gone on over the years, have you noticed any difference?
Absolutely, and that's one of the other reasons that I got into photographing these particular animals is because they are decreasing, and they're decreasing for any number of reasons. First, just overall, the coral reefs themselves are somewhat endangered.
Yeah.
All the way from global warming to cyanide fishing, dynamite fishing.
What is cyanide fishing?
Cyanide fishing is where there's a demand. Obviously, there's a demand for saltwater aquarium fish. And so instead of painstakingly taking a slurp gun and collecting individual fish, the native folks will go and dump a weak concentration of cyanide onto the reef, and it paralyzes just a tremendous number of fish.
Oh, my God.
But it also weakens them, and so I think the mortality rate in the aquarium trade with cyanide-fished fish is between 60 and 70%.
Oh, that's so, just crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And so I don't bemoan folks keeping saltwater aquariums, but cyanide fishing, you know, obviously reputable aquarium stores won't collect or use cyanide fishing, but some of the internet folks do.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of, I mean, it's once they wake up from the cyanide, you can't really tell the difference.
There's a thousand reasons that's wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
And the dynamite fishing, they just toss dynamite, sticks of dynamite in, and the concussion paralyzes, blows out the air bladders, whatever, and they just pick the fish up, and that's for eating.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop there. They use, or a lot of the developing countries use the coral reefs as, like, cement.
Yeah.
What I understand, the runway on a couple of the Maldive islands is made from the coral reef right off the island itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, have you ever heard, this may be completely off the topic, but of anything called living reefs where you would dedicate a deceased person? I would dedicate my body, for instance. I would get cremated, and then they would put it with some form of cement and then add it to the coral reefs. It's supposed to be helping regrow. Is that true?
I've not heard that about the reefs. I have heard that where folks do it and they plant a redwood or a sequoia or something like that.
Yeah, no, check it out. We were learning about this a couple of years ago, and it's done obviously in ocean areas where there are reefs, like down in Florida, for instance. You can have yourself put into some kind of cement ball that is friendly with the coral reef and helps grow coral reef around it.
Like I said, I've not heard that. I mean, there are certainly cement balls, cement blocks, where people, you know, the artificial reefs that they put on the sand, and
they're
pretty quickly colonized by corals and sponges and all that. So it makes sense.
Well, apparently they need help.
Oh, they need a lot of help. Absolutely.
Wow. So are you advocating and trying to help raise awareness with your book and your photographs and your, your interest in these things?
Yeah, absolutely. I've given lectures at the Explorers Club and radio interviews and Audubon Society, things like that. What people also don't recognize or don't know is that as the water temperature warms with global warming and the ocean water, the temperature is raising, it's on the rise, the shells themselves have problems concentrating calcium carbonate from the water to make their own shells.
Really?
So it's much like the silent spring, the DDT, and and the bird eggs. The shells become very fragile.
Huh. Well, you know, it's just all these things that we're not aware that are happening. So I'm really glad that you're taking this time and this interest, obviously sharing your beautiful artwork, but to talk about it, because I'm telling you, this is not something that I would have thought much about, but it doesn't entirely surprise me, sadly.
And people go, okay, well, what's the value in a living shell? Well, from an economic standpoint, many times these shells provide protein to islanders.
Right.
And
right.
Not only islanders. I mean, we eat mussels and oysters and clams and conchs and all that. But also there are some very specific shells. One of them is called the Triton Trumpet that eats what's known as crown of thorn starfish.
Huh.
And the crown of thorn starfish eat coral reefs. And so if you collect these Triton Trumpets for their shells and endanger them,
the coral reefs,
massively explodes, and you start having reefs eaten by starfish.
Well, it's just another example of how we are kind of messing with an ecosystem that has, you'd like to think it's not that fragile, but, you know, everything has an effect, right? Everything has an impact.
I don't think it's that fragile. I think if we left everything alone, it would quickly balance itself.
Okay.
But,
so, that was my next question, is what can we do to pay attention and help?
Yeah, I personally say leave it alone.
Yeah.
Don't mess with stuff.
Yeah.
Don't mess with stuff you don't know about.
That's kind of a good policy in general, right?
Yeah, it is.
and
it's like you say, we're messing with the ecosystem.
Well, everybody, we have to wrap this up, and I literally could talk to you all day for lots of reasons. But folks should go to, which website would you prefer they go to?
To see the best photos, it's livingshells.com.
Yeah, and you can learn more about Dr. Rawlings and all of his amazing work, but I'm very grateful for this particular work you're doing, and I hope we get to talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. I'd be glad to come back and talk to you guys.
Keep taking those photographs.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Green Diva's Heart Wildlife. Please visit thegreendivas.com, that's T-H-E, greendivas.com, to learn more about wildlife, nature, and a whole lot more.
By definition, the term endangered means that a species of organisms has a high probability of becoming extinct. But some species have recovered and are thriving. More on that after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order Tall Grass Beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
Currently in the United States, there are 750 plant and 496 animal species on the endangered species list. But in the last few years, some species have made a dramatic comeback. Perhaps the greatest comeback is the American bald eagle. The symbol of our nation was nearly eradicated and has been under protection since 1940 and hit an all-time low of only 417 nesting pairs in 1963. It's grown to nearly 10,000 pairs in 2011 and was taken off the endangered list in 2007. There is much to be done to keep nature in balance by the same factor that knocked them out of balance, humans. I'm Bill Curtis, and Earth Matters.
The Green Divas love food. Organic, local, fresh, whole, delicious food. Here now is another Green Diva foodie file.
And another delicious, mouth-watering foodie file with our favorite Holly Thompson. And that's H-O-L-L-I Thompson from hollythompson.com. She's an author. And, you know, she just makes me hungry. And she's the author. Her book is Discovering Your Nutritional Style. And it's really appeals to me, the whole concept. And anyway, Holly, I think we're going to talk about grains today. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's so nice to be here with you again.
Yay. So tell us about grains. There's like all kinds of different philosophies about grains these days, right?
Yeah, you know, it is definitely a hot topic due to the popularity of a couple of key books out there. Grain Brain, Wheat Belly. This is definitely a trending nutritional topic. And I know in working with a lot of my clients and working on cleanses with groups, I am really beginning to see that a lot of women in particular, or people who have challenges in their digestive tract, are having great success with weight loss and energy by either minimizing, changing, or removing grains altogether from their diet.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, right? You've heard this too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like most dietary theories out there, you and I agree, the answer lies within you. You know, this is an individual topic. You know, if you eat processed grains right now, so if you're somebody who loves your breads, your wraps, your pastas, you know, switching to organic choices that are preferably gluten-free is a really good improvement on your diet.
Yes.
Okay, so just making that easy change. If you are eating organic or gluten-free processed foods already, often switching to gluten-free whole grains like quinoa, millet, or brown rice is beneficial for you.
Okay.
So just even getting away from the processed back to the whole grain is a good step.
Yes.
And if you eat gluten-free grains frequently, but you still have digestive issues or any skin issues or and often even an inability to lose those last 15 pounds,
yeah.
then I would encourage you to just try removing grains altogether.
Yeah.
Focusing on those healthy proteins and more veggies
right.
Instead of the grains and see what happens. And, you know, you can switch over like something like a zucchini pasta where you're going to spiralize your zucchini, adding in more starchy vegetables like sweet potatoes and roasted beets is a good way to wean yourself off of grains so that you're replacing that starchy satisfaction in your gut
yeah.
with, you know, something else that's going to give that to you.
Yeah, because I'll tell you, I love my grains. And
mm-hmm.
I've been primarily gluten-free, you know, not that mm-hmm. I don't get dosed or dose myself once in a while. But it's for health reasons. I'm not celiac, but I clearly have issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely feel a lot better, but I still want to eat rice. And I know that, you know, with all this arsenic in rice and all this, come on, people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to eat more quinoa, and I'm trying to eat less grains in general, which is hard. In the winter, I just want, you know, a bowl of rice with all kinds of goodies on it.
Right, right. Yeah, and if you're used to that, you know, you're used to that feeling, that fullness feeling and that satisfaction that comes from that carbohydrate.
Yes.
So that's why, you know, I gave you those substitutions.
Yeah.
Because often it really helps, you know, to, as you're trying to ease over. I mean, I think it can be challenging to go cold turkey with anything in your diet that you love. I'm always one to preempt it with some good substitutions and allow you to wean yourself off of it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. No, I had done a really serious cleansing diet years ago, sort of a liver vacation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give my liver vacation so all the foods were supposed to just really be easier on the system, support the metabolism and the kidneys, yada, yada. And
right.
And one of the big things was there was no grains. I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to die. and I'll tell you what, I was allowed to eat like mounds of vegetables. They were like free. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, then I'll just eat a giant bowl of vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so healthy and happy, and I really need to try that again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a great thing. I definitely would try it again, especially if you're feeling like a sluggish digestion, if you're feeling like your energy is not as high as it could be.
Yeah.
Or if you do have, you know, it's really can work for weight loss. That
yep.
is the incredible thing. I mean,
yep.
those last 10 pounds can go flying off you.
Yeah.
And not you in particular, but anyone listening to this, it really can make a big difference.
Yeah, for me, it's those last 50 pounds. They're so stubborn. actually, I'm working it. I'm you know, despite menopause, I'm working it, man.
Good. I think you're doing great. Every time we talk, you amaze me with what you know and what you're doing and what you're up to. So
that's kind of why, like,
yeah,
well, I do eat fairly well. I've learned a lot over the years, and so sometimes I marvel at the fact that I'm not a little bit more svelte, but I am healthy and happy, and I just love food, apparently. So I always love talking to Holly, and she offers us wonderful posts. But in the meantime, please go to Holly Thompson, Holly Thompson.com, and we'll look forward to having Holly on again soon.
Yay. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be with you all the time.
Thanks, Holly. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Hope you're hungry. For more easy and delicious recipes and even more foodie information, go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
Green Divas are all about buying less and making more. But when we do buy stuff, we try to make sure it is sustainably made and supports healthy green living. Here's something we liked and wanted to share with you. Okay, if you are looking for like a candy fix, and I'm not really really a candy girl, but I do covet my peanut butter cups, you know, the chocolate peanut butter cups. And, you know, I like the healthier versions, but, you know, it's still sort of got stuff. So Lynn finds this company called Unreal, right? And she, unbeknownst to me, has them send out samples. And I get this box without having any knowledge of what's going on of, like, this phenomenal, it's Unreal candy. And they're like a variety of different peanut butter cup type things, and also some little like Reese's Pieces kind of things, right? But the ingredients are incredible. No artificial, it's gluten-free, vegan, non-GMO, and they're freaking I have to hide them from my kids. So anyway, the thing that's also really cool about this is these young men have put these together. Nikki is in high school. He's 18. And his brother Chris is 21. Their last name is Bronner. They're not related to Dr. Bronner's, but they're still really cool. Hi, Nikki and Chris.
Hi, thanks, Meg. Hey, Meg, thanks so much for having us.
Wow. So I just really want to ask you guys, like, what motivated you to do this?
Well, I could say it's more of like, I really want to, like, give back to the community and all that, which is true. But at the time that I guess I had the idea for this company, I was around 11 and 12, and it was more of, man, I really just want to have my candy.
Wait a minute. You were 11 or 12 years old?
Oh, yeah. yeah. So way back then, I was out trick-or-treating with my friends, you know, and I had come back every year with a huge bag of candy. And the next morning, you know, half, most of it would be gone. My parents would take it, and I'd get pretty angry. Because, you know, I was getting older, and I knew it was a little bit silly to dress up, but I really just wanted my candy. So I asked my parents, you know, why are you taking away my candy?
Like, why you take away my candy?
Right? Well, I mean, if you have kids, so you must know. Do you take away their candy?
Oh, definitely. And with these bags of candies, I would – but honestly, I would put aside all the Reese's peanut butter cups.
That's great. Yeah, so that was my issue. I said, you know, Mom, Dad, you take away my candy, and you say it's bad for me, but I don't really believe you. I mean, I took – you know, peanut butter cups are my favorite candy. And I was wondering, because I eat peanut butter, and my parents love that when I eat peanut butter, and they don't mind if I have chocolate sometimes or dark chocolate, but for some reason, when you put them together into a peanut butter cup candy, it's really bad for you. And I say, you know what, Mom, Dad, I think I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to show you that peanut butter cups aren't that bad. But I have to say, for the first time in my dad's life, probably, he was actually right. Those peanut butter cups are pretty bad for you. And, for obvious reasons, I knew you couldn't just stick peanut butter on chocolate and sell it. But I figured, why can't we go as close as we can?
Yeah.
The end product can't be that bad.
Well, so you and your brother have gone out of your way to find the best ingredients and the most, how do I put it, like the most pure and simple way to put it all together.
Exactly.
I am, like, so impressed. Okay, you got organic palm oil. I'm assuming that you work hard to get, like, conflict-free palm oil?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all sustainable palm oil, and we find farms that are only second and third generation growth, and for every hectare harvested, they replant three, since we know that palm oil is kind of a controversial ingredient.
Wow.
So we want to make sure that we're getting only the best so that we can have the best product, and also be the best for the environment and for the world.
So, you know, what we're saying here is this stuff it's so thoughtfully produced from a guy who, you know, was inspired because he loves his candy and he wants to have the healthier version and, you know, minimize the impact on the environment doing it. So I love it. I love it. I love it. And I think it's great that you two young men are, you know, out there making a difference already and sharing your fun with the world. We're going to close this up, but tell people how they can find Unreal.
Let's see. So, well, I just want to say one more thing, which is just a really big part of our mission. That's most importantly to inspire other people and other companies to start challenging the things that they take for granted. That's really why we started this company.
Nice.
And created a company and using entrepreneurship to
prove that you can start to look at the things in your life that you always kind of ask this question in your back of your mind, like, why does it have to be this way, and why can't it be different? And also, we want to inspire the bigger companies like Mars and
yes.
And to actually start to change their, and Hershey's, to change their ingredients, prove that there's consumer demand and that we can, if two kids and
yes.
Jeff can do it, that anyone can do it. And
that's so, a great right now, message.
Oh, sorry?
That's a great message, and I think you're going to give them a run for their money, and we're going to help you do that for sure.
You can find the candy now online at getunreal.com, but it's also in Whole Foods, Kroger, and Target.
Wow. Wow. Well, good job, you guys, and keep up the yummy work, and we'll talk to you again as things evolve.
Thank you so much, Meg.
To learn about more low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green, please visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com. There are people in this world that just sparkle with an almost magical and radiant energy, leaving a wake of good stuff wherever they go. We just love meeting and talking with these folks who inspire us to be better, do better. Okay, so we have a really fascinating woman who I swear I could talk to her all day long. Because we did, we started chatting, and I thought, oh my gosh, we're not even recording. We have to start recording what we're talking about because she's fascinating. Her name is Christine Funk, goes by Christy Funk. She's a lifestyle mentor, eco-beauty expert. She's all about radical self-love. Hi, Christy.
Good morning.
We have like a million topics we want to cover, and so we're going to have you back. But today, I think we're going to focus on radical self-care and what that means. And obviously, there's so many different levels, and it's being talked about out there by so many people on so many, you know, other levels. What do you mean when you say radical self-care?
I mean, this is, I teach women this all the time about, it's beauty from the inside out. And I talk about radical self-care as a deeper way of taking care of ourselves. So we have to find self-worth, right? We have to know that we're worth the investment.
Yeah.
It's not about getting that cute dress and putting on lipstick and going out on the town or, you know, getting your nails done. Those are great. But I want to go deeper in our self-care so that it is a lifestyle. It's like brushing your teeth, and you adopt these things that are really better for yourself and in the long run, the community around you.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's nice. It's nice to, like, take care of yourself by taking a little time out to get your nails done, but that's a bit superficial, and what you're saying is do it, but here's some deeper, deeper ideas.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's get in there so that we make radical changes in our self-care and we adopt it in a way that it becomes so second nature so that we don't have to, like, think that it needs to be a spa getaway.
Right. Right. It's just like, this is part of what I do. Right.
And it's very vital for me, for my relationships, my children, my job, the community. Because if a woman is depleted, she serves nobody. She does nobody any good. So
that old saying, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Right. Happy wife, happy life.
There.
But those can also be what we've misconstrued as just like, oh, you know, send mama off for like an hour and she's going to be all good. It's like, no, it's more. It starts in the home. And for me, it's very personal because I have two little boys.
Right.
And I want them to know that mommy's taking care of herself because then they're going to value that in the women that they're, you know, eventually marrying or who they're dating. They understand that it's not selfish. And that's the biggest hang-up that we have, and it's the issue, the number one issue that I have with women, is that they really torture themselves about it being selfish.
So what about, like, if I believe that I'm going to get, you know, a spa treatment, but inside I'm riddled with guilt and tormenting myself. So I'm not really even fully benefiting, I believe, if I'm going to torment myself about it. And the other thing that you mentioned that I think is so vital, and that is, how can we convey to our sons and our daughters and our husbands and our friends that it's okay if we don't believe it on the inside?
And that's where, honestly, that's the work that I do.
Yeah.
I get in there. Because we have to take a look at how we come into the world as these, you know, these light beings. We come in as full of just possibilities, and we come in as love, right? We come in just ready to, and especially if we're in this nurturing environment, and we come in, I don't want to say perfect, because we're not perfect. Energetically, we're not perfect, but we're just so ripe and open. And then somewhere along the road, somebody shows us, tells us, we experience either a severe trauma or even just a slight trauma, where we're told, you know, something is telling us, oh, we're not worthy. It's shame, guilt, fear. You're not pretty. You're not performing. And our world shuts down, and we end up taking that pain along our lives. And getting to the root of that, of where we went from being I'm worth it to I'm not worthy. This is especially true with sexual abuse, any type of emotional abuse early on.
Right.
And so I take a look at that, you know, just that relationship. So we get to that point where we were worthy, and now we're not, so that we get back to that. So once we have that self-worth and that, oh, no, I'm enough, then we can stand up to the plate and say, you know, I'm worth this time. I'm taking it. You take ownership of it, too, so there's no excuses. Nobody can tell you no.
Right.
If it's in a loving place for you, your highest good, and for those around you.
Well, I do know for me, when I am solid and okay with making a decision to, you know, take a day off to do something special.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm calm about it, and I don't have any qualms. Nobody around me seems to, or even if they try to rattle me, I'm like, yeah, sorry, too bad, you know. But if I'm shaky about it and I'm feeling a little guilty, then it's really easy for everybody around me, or anybody around me who, you know, whatever, wants to kind of get in there and poke around to enhance that guilt and shame. It's terrible.
It's like they just, when we come from self-confidence, when we come from that place of like, I am enough, I'm worth this, there is an energy. I mean, we can't deny what energy does. Like, when somebody comes into the room and they're just, like, so dynamic, and people are drawn like magnets around them, and then you have somebody else that's so toxic, like, hell no, I'm going to the bathroom. I don't want to be anywhere near them. It's the same with our emotional well-being.
Yeah.
You know, if we come from a place of, like, real light and love, it sounds so New Agey and hippie, but as I get older, I'm finding out how important
There's something to be said about our vibration and our energy, whatever you want to call it, you know.
Exactly. And so if we're putting out to the world, we attract what we put out.
Yeah.
So if we are a victim, guess what we get?
Yeah.
We continue getting relationships like that. We attract that. So if we start to put boundaries and put ourselves, feet rooted in the earth, and just really like, no, this is what I'm doing for me. And it is an interesting shift. When a woman, and I can speak for myself, when you live your life as the good girl, the nice girl,
right,
the yes girl, and you start to rein in and own your power and say no, I'm doing this, it rattles.
Well, it everyone. Does. Yeah, it does. There's a little bit of an adjustment period.
Yeah, and I mean, this is why it's so great to do this type of work with young girls and boys.
Right.
So that there never has to be. It's not about being a battleground.
Right.
But teaching young children how to take care of themselves and how to, you know, respect themselves and love themselves. So.
Well, I love that you're working with other women and, of course, with your sons and encouraging people to raise children that understand this. It is an inside job. And it, really, there's no amount of shopping or spying or running off to gurus that's going to fix what we really need to do inside.
Right, and I'm so glad that you said that about gurus and so on, is that where the teachers that have been most instrumental in my life are the ones that made me do the work.
Right.
That I didn't rely, and I learned even with, like, you know, the eco beauty, organic eating, healthy eating, even natural remedies, I feel very empowered because I know that when my kids get sick or I get sick, I go straight from, I call it my witch cabinet.
You yep, know? Yeah.
So, you know, doing that is just really empowering, and I'm not, and that you can go away to retreat and feel good and yummy, and oh my gosh, I'm just so lit up, right? You go to a retreat or a convention or anything, you pay the money, you and then you're high, right? You're
yeah.
high for a few days.
Yeah.
And then it comes down and it's like, wait.
I'm home,
what do I do now? Like, and so I invite women to just really get down and dirty in there.
Yeah.
And it's not, it, you know, because magazines will talk, I guess so many celebrities are talking about self-love, and I just keep looking at it like a lot of this is just very surface.
You're right.
Let's bust the stuff up that's put us in that place, and so it's longevity. I'm all about longevity. I don't want a quick fix. I want to work for this.
Yeah, and you know, it's not always easy or comfortable, the process.
No.
You know, it's going to require a little bit of work, and work mm-hmm. sometimes is messy, and so be it. I'm all on board. I really want to continue this conversation. We have to close out this segment, but you and I are going to talk again, and we'll share it with the audience because you've got a lot of great stuff to share.
This is exciting. Thank you so much
for having me. And tell people how they can – I think it's ChristyFunk.com, right?
Exactly.
That simple?
Yeah, and it's getting rebuilt, but yeah, I have a website right now, ChristyFunk.com.
Cool. Thank you so much, Christy. And
thank you.
Everybody stay tuned. More coming up.
We hope you're feeling the sparkle. Go out there and light up the world. As Dante said, even a little spark may burst a flame. For more inspiration, visit thegreendivas.com and listen for this and other shows on ggdradio.com.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Well, it is my pleasure today to finally get a chance to speak with Dr. Green. It happens to be the World Health Day today. I don't know if he knew that. I just kind of found out because I can't keep up with everything. But I'm just saying that, and it's not probably going to be that when we post and produce this. But anyway, I just thought it was kind of appropriate. Dr. Green is a very well-known pediatrician, among other things, and he's got a fabulous website, and which is drgreen.com, right, Dr. Green?
That's right. And I wanted to say, and that's Dr. Green with an E, by the way, D-R-G-R-E-E-N-E.
Thank you, yes.
And Megan, it's fabulous to be with you, and I actually did know it's World Health Day. I am celebrating World Health Day by, I'm on the World Health Day episode of the Dr. Oz Show.
Oh my gosh,
World...
well, of course you are. That's insane.
And then also here with you, I'm so excited.
See, aren't we lucky? I feel pretty privileged. I've been on Dr. Oz too, but probably not in the same capacity. I was making avocado brownies for him. Which he loved, by the way. He loved them.
I bet.
So we're here to talk a bit about a really fascinating campaign that you've been working on for a few years, and I think there's a new push coming to help raise awareness about what we're feeding our babies, and it's called White Out.
That's right. White Out as in erasing a mistake, and also as in getting rid of processed white flour for babies.
I love it.
For the last several decades, the most common first food and the number one source of solid food calories for babies has been processed white flour. We call
right.
it white rice cereal.
Yeah.
But there's no good reason for it. You now understand.
Yeah. 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 And I don't know. I remember when I did finally give my kids, I breastfed them for a long time. When I finally did give them any kind of cereal, it was organic, of course, which was hard to find way back in the day. But I use my breast milk to at least, you know, kind of, that's how I made it, with warm breast milk.
That's a great way to do it.
I mean,
it.
If you're going to do it, right? But I love what I had read about your, you know, what you're trying to help everybody understand is that it's like super sugar carb loading for these poor babies.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a couple problems with it. A lot of folks say, hey, we did it for decades and everybody turned out okay.
Well,
but it turns out everybody didn't turn out.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is one of the triggers for the childhood obesity epidemic. Because very early on, for the last several decades, many babies have extra fat cells, not just that they're chubby, but new additional fat cells and altered metabolism. And one of the things we know about this processed white flour is it can do that. It can cause a spike in blood sugar. In fact, it starts turning to glucose in the mouth, and it's nearly 100% glucose by the time it's absorbed. And you get a spike in insulin afterwards, and it changes the metabolism. So that's one reason. The other reason I'm concerned about it is that we now understand, and didn't for a long time, that most taste preferences are learned. It's not genetic. It's something that you learn, like you learn language. It's what you're exposed to during this critical window of time.
Yeah, my mother was unfortunately a gourmet cook, and there was a lot of butter involved.
There you go. And for a lot of kids, that's what they're getting is this processed white flour.
Yeah.
So it's no surprise then that if you look at all of childhood, all the way up to 18, and this was done recently as part of the USDA analysis of what Americans are eating, they found if you listed food ingredients on kids, if they came with a food label based on how much is in them, the number one ingredient in childhood is processed white flour treats.
And that really is, it's just right up there with sugar, with processed sugar, right?
Yeah, it's added sugar has, I think, some even more problems because of the fructose is part of it.
Yeah.
But processed white flour, if we could eliminate added sugar and so much white flour from kids' diets, we'd be going a long way towards improving health in a lot of different dimensions. So the idea behind White Out is really simple. It's just let every baby's first grain be a whole grain.
Yeah.
They won't mind. They'll thank you for that.
Yeah.
They'll fall in love with them. And let every kid's first food be a real food instead of a super processed one.
Yeah.
So it's real simple. It doesn't cost a dime. And the way we're doing the campaign is word of mouth. It's parents sharing with parents. And that's turning pediatricians around.
I like that.
Pediatricians are finally getting on board.
Well, you know, I mean, when enough parents stomp into their pediatrician's office and say, wait a minute, you know, why am I doing this? And, you know, I know when I had a baby food grinder. And I literally, whatever I cooked, whether it was, you know, salmon and brown rice or whatever, I ground it up, and that's what the baby's got.
That's such a good way to do it. Yeah, people think that making your own baby food is difficult.
No.
And it would be if you did all these recipes just for them. But it's far better to teach kids in that sort of impressionable time to love the food that you like.
Yeah.
So just take what you're eating, more or less, grind it up, and maybe add some breast milk and give that to them.
Yeah.
And there's only a few things to watch out for. There's been this sort of, I'm afraid, a culture of fear that parents are afraid, well, I might do something they shouldn't get.
Right.
Like maybe salmon wouldn't be good for children.
Well, maybe not. I probably made that. But I also wasn't feeding.
No, it is good.
It is good. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah. So we now understand you don't have to hold off on any food for a healthy child because of allergies once they're 6 months old or so.
Yeah.
And so it's okay to have nuts and salmon and egg all grabbed up. In fact, the evidence is looking like the earlier they get introduced,
yeah,
and especially if they're still breastfeeding, the less chance they have a
feeding
allergy.
Yeah.
The other things to worry about are shapes or textures they might choke on.
Right.
Or things that might carry an infection in them, like honey or undercooked or raw milk or undercooked meat, that kind of thing.
Okay. All right. So that's pretty doable. I mean, that seems and it really is as simple as having a food processor. I literally had a hand grinder, which is what I used most of back then. It was easy. It's that simple.
Yeah, super simple to do, and that way you can let every child's first food be a real food instead of something that's super processed, and let every child's first grain be a whole grain. And I really believe that by doing that one simple thing and spreading the word to white out that mistake, that we can start people on a great food journey and falling in love with the foods that their bodies are craving.
Well, I've seen it in my grandchildren because my children, you know, I did all that when they were little, and then they grew into little teenagers and ate whatever they wanted. And I was like, oh, my God, what's happening? But they came back around and they love salads and they love really good, healthy food. My one daughter is a foodie, you know, and she's fascinated by all this cool vegan raw food that I make from time to time. And it's nice to see them come around. And my older daughter, who has two children, it's neat to watch her feed them, you know, the stuff that, well, I was afraid, when they were teenagers, I would have thought they would have fed them McDonald's or something. But they come around, and it seems like their taste buds are trained ultimately on that. My kids crave raw salad and fresh foods.
Yeah, they do come around. And I've seen that with children, including my own. But there's also been studies done in animals where they get really healthy food very early in life, and then they're put out with a bunch of other animals where they have access to everything,
right?
Brownies and potato chips and all kinds of stuff that's terrible for them. And at the end, they come back around and they are healthier just from getting fed early on. It sets the trajectory for health for the rest of their lives.
Well, I feel vindicated, validated, and all that, because everybody thought I was nuts, you know, 30 years ago. You know, and I was thinking as you were talking, one of the first things I fed my kids, I don't remember if I did any kind of rice cereal, it would have been brown rice cereal, but I think it was a mixture of banana and avocado. That was one of each of my children. I had three daughters. I did banana and avocado, mashed it all up, and they thought it was like, you know, ice cream. They thought it was the best thing. Yeah.
I love that. Those are probably my favorite first foods. So either banana, avocado, or sweet potato if it's been cooked. Because they're soft, they mash up really easily, they're delicious. And the nice thing is kids learn food preferences by taste, but also by their other senses.
Yeah.
So they can actually look at the banana and put the banana in our hands, or the avocado.
Yeah.
And they can see you eat part of it. And then they mash up and get part of it too. So we skip the whole kids meal phase. They like what we like.
Well, you know, fresh food has such great colors and textures and strawberry. Look at that strawberry. I don't know if strawberry is good for little ones, but you know what I mean. I actually mashed together the bananas and the avocado. It made this incredibly tasty little mashy pudding.
That sounds great. And I'm a fan of mixtures early on for kids. And even spices to a certain extent to learn the flavoring profiles that we like. Now, they have more taste buds than we do. So everything tastes a bit brighter.
Right.
So I wouldn't overdo it with super spicy stuff. But hints of it can be great.
Well, yeah. And, you know, they haven't deadened their taste buds with too much coffee or cigarettes or whatever. Other things that adults can do to themselves. But well, this is really great. So we're happy to talk about this and share this up. And happy World Health Day. And this won't come out today, but I'm going to say it anyway. Thank you so much for taking time to call us, Dr. Green.
And Megan, happy World Health Day to you. And thank you for spreading the word. This is a great gift to the next generation.
Aww.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. please visit thegreendivas.com. That's THEGreenDivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THEGreenDivas.com.